Thank you, David. It's a pleasure to be here, and hopefully we'll uncover a few interesting issues for you to talk about and ask some questions on a bit later. I will cover sort of two topics that are a little bit separate. One is the nation-building aspect of the Commonwealth recent packages and the impact on Victoria. And then secondly, looking at the impact of the current global financial crisis on PPP projects. Looking at the Commonwealth's recent nation-building projects, the Building Australia Fund, as you will all know, Victoria got funded out of that, the regional rail link, the Commonwealth put in $3.3 billion out of that. We also got some money for the Metro Rail Tunnel project. There's no doubt at all that those two projects will be major nation-building projects in Victoria. They accorded with our, amongst our highest priorities in putting projects to the Commonwealth for selection. I mean, one of the risks here, we put up projects, the Commonwealth selects what they want to actually prioritise and fund, but we were quite happy with those particular choices. I'll spend a bit more time on the Regional Rail Link in a sec, but it is a massive project. The Metro Rail Tunnel project will also be a massive project. It'll increase the number of train paths in Victoria dramatically, and it's no use getting more rolling stock if you haven't got train paths to put them on. The federal government also indicated there's some other Victorian projects that had been put up that wouldn't be funded now, but they would look at in any future rounds, or we hope there's some future rounds going ahead. And looking at those ones there, a number of those you have to also see as being nation building. I mean, those ones that involve the port-related projects, for instance, will have major impacts on Australia's capacity to undertake international trade. So the Donnybrook Beveridge Interstate Freight Terminal will actually take a whole lot of our freight terminal activity away from the Port of Melbourne and freeing up that area there for train and road-related stuff to the port. Port of Hastings. Hastings is the next sort of, it's the spillover port for Melbourne in our current plans. So obviously we need to keep transport links to Hastings alive and look at how we might develop Hastings over time. There's also sort of work we're looking to do on having a third container terminal facility at the Port of Melbourne. You'll be aware that both Brisbane and Sydney have gone that way. We're obviously looking to see whether Melbourne needs to do that as well. So they're on the future line of projects that may get some funding in the future, and I think a number of those would certainly have very strong nation-building credentials. We also got money from the Commonwealth for the Parkville Comprehensive Cancer Centre, and I talk about that in a sec as well, separately. Regional Rail Link, I mean, people might know a lot about this. It isn't a very sexy project, but it's actually a massive project. There's 40 kilometres of track, a lot of it's greenfield. It's the biggest rail expansion since the Sydney Loop in Melbourne. The big thing it does is actually separate out the country trains from the metro trains, and four of the five country train lines in Victoria actually go through North Melbourne, so there's a big clog on the western side of the city, and that just clogs up the path of metro trains. So once we can separate out the country trains on their own dedicated line, we're then going to get a lot more capacity to actually fix up our metro train system. So that's, we saw that as being the biggest single train sort of activity we had to do in Victoria. And then the metro, then the tunnel that will follow beyond that will link into that very nicely. So we see that as being a major nation-building activity for Victoria. The Parkville Comprehensive Cancer Centre, the Commonwealth recently announced they'd put in $426 million to this. The state's putting in similar money. There's also money from other sources as well, the hospitals themselves. There's actually six partners in this project. University of Melbourne, Walter and Eliza Hall, there's the hospitals. There's about six parties all up. So we have a really great opportunity to actually put together in Victoria our cancer expertise. That will help not just Victorian sort of well-being of cancer sufferers, but also help the Victorian economy through getting better health outcomes and better research outcomes out of all that. So we see that as being a major nation-building exercise in its own right as well. An even bigger package has been the Commonwealth stimulus package for education and housing. I know here that Tony Canavan in the room has got the Victorian job of allocating out all this money. It's a lot of money to allocate out. Now, this in its own right will actually help the Victorian economy and get jobs going a lot more quickly than what some of the big infrastructure projects will do. So that was sort of one of its major roles to do that. But also at the same time, it's actually increasing our productive capacity by improving our school infrastructure and by providing social housing that had been certainly necessary. So it's filled a very nice timing gap, in a sense, for maintenance of employment in construction while the bigger stuff can start coming online. Just focusing on PPPs now a bit more for a minute, just an up-to-date of where we are. We've got 18 roughly projects that have been done in Victoria. There's a further three in the market, which I think you're all aware of. There may be a fourth soon. We expect the Parkville Cancer Centre would probably go the PPP route. But if we have four or five in the market, I think that's about right in Victoria. Beyond that, there's a few more that we're looking at as well. So this government still remains very committed to doing PPP projects. We've been able to keep on signing them through the current global financial situation. The schools one got signed in December. The Biosciences Centre at La Trobe was signed recently. Albeit they're still relatively small projects, we still got them away with a pretty good outcome, or a very good outcome, we think, for the government. Right, the challenges to PPP projects from the global financial crisis now certainly are real, but they haven't stopped us doing projects to date, but they're certainly real. We've got tightened liquidity. I mean, the banks are able to lend less money against particular projects. They're also limited about how much they can lend against particular contractors. You get a higher cost of funds, there's a much higher risk premium. I think a slide from Ian will actually talk to that a bit more later, though I noticed in his slides. But the higher risk premiums over the last year are certainly a factor. Lack of credit. You've got some banks are much less active than what they were, although probably not as much as what people initially thought. But you've also got the loss of the project bond market, which has really has a large impact on PPPs. And we'd like to see that come back again, but that may take a little while. Shortage of liquidity. I mean, generally speaking, the current view is that you won't be able to, well, it's difficult to get projects fully funded it gets increasingly harder beyond 500 mil to fund them, and up near a bill is seen by many to be a limit to fully funding projects in the private sector. So that's sort of a rule of thumb. The debt is at much shorter tenure than what we used to have. You often see debt for over 20 years. You're now looking at 3 to 5 year debt, the sort of rollovers occurring then. So a much different scenario, which is where banks would prefer to play in that type of area. But that's what's happening at the moment. Given that and the uncertainties, bidders are much less happy to take refinancing risks. So governments have been asked to take refinancing risk, which isn't all downside. I mean, if we expect that risk premiums might come down in a few years' time, there might be a bit of upside for us in actually taking that risk on board. But it's certainly one that the bidders are much less happy to take. The other one there on the bottom corner, lack of appetite for patronage risk, that's really a bit independent of the global financial crisis. We saw that happening a year or two ago with there'd been very strong bidding for road projects in Australia, and not all of those reached their target. So I think even before the GFC took place, there was a weakening appetite for taking of toll road risk by the private sector, and that still exists as well. Okay, so in terms of what we might do about it, as I said, we're still committed to the PPP model. We think our underlying risk allocation that we developed over the previous number of years had got to a pretty good point, so we're still very keen to maintain that. Although obviously in the current situation, there's a couple of areas where we had to, like refinancing, we have to go and rethink for the current period. So the challenge is for us, liquidity shortage does make it more difficult for large projects when you aren't going to get as easily 3 fully underwritten bids for projects as what we would have had in the past, for instance. There's some short-term policy issues to resolve, like around refinancing. Now, the ways that we can look at ameliorating these particular issues, there's two sort of main routes. One is through changing our tendering process and requirements, and the second is about considering how we might help fund any funding gap in these particular projects. Looking at the tendering changes, we haven't done anything to date in our current projects, but things we certainly have considered are the need perhaps not to have fully underwritten bids in our projects. We've all thought about going back to 2 sorts of bidders rather than 3 to increase the chance of getting fully funded bids. What we'll do is, on a case-by-case basis, given the tenders that we get and the project and the broader picture. But there's some of the things that we will keep on looking at. In terms of direct government support for any funding gap that does arise, and obviously we're still very keen to maximise the amount of private sector finance in these projects. That's still our major aim. Obviously, if some of the last banks in are particularly expensive, then we probably wouldn't like to see them stay there. But on the whole, we are very keen to maximise the private sector finance in these projects. So things like whether government puts a capital contribution in, whether we add some senior debt, or whether we in some way guarantee the syndication exercise to try and sort of give the private sector the most chance as they have to try and maximise private sector debt, they're all things that we do have a look at. Well, I've already spoken about the toll revenue risk, and I expect that in some of the, if there's toll roads going forward, and we will need to keep on doing toll roads because it is quite a good way of meeting our funding costs for some of these, that you may have the government taking a greater role in the toll revenue part of those going forward. So we'll keep on doing PPPs because we think they give us good value for money for the reasons that I've got up there and I won't go through again today. So looking at a bit of a summary here, we think that good PPPs are still viable in the current market. Funding constraints may cap the project size, or may impact how we should go through the bidding process. So we're going to look at our policy responses, which may be around tendering process or around our funding, whether we have to actually add and help towards the funding gap. But there's a lot of emphasis has been on the troubles for PPPs, but government's cost of borrowing has actually also increased over the recent period of time, and governments have had limited access to capital markets as well. So it's not just PPPs that are having trouble here. I mean, governments generally are finding that access to capital markets has changed over the last 12, 18 months. Although we've been able to get away our bonds in Victoria still, it still doesn't mean it hasn't been harder than normal. Well, PPPs we think will continue in Victoria while they keep on giving us good outcomes, and we believe they have. Their financial savings, increased scope and quality, and PPPs there's been some tests or studies done over the last couple of years that have really, I think, shown what we've always known, that there's much greater budget and cost certainty around PPPs than around traditional. You're much more confident about getting a building done by a certain time and to a certain cost, and that's very appealing to politicians. And that's it. Okay, I'm happy to take any questions a bit later.